listening to Regional Originals, a Masters of the Stage podcast. Regional Originals is a series of interviews with some of the most exciting directors and choreographers working in America's regional theater today.
Hi, I'm M. Graham Smith, and this is Masters of the Stage Regional Originals, brought to you by SDC Foundation. Our guest today is Taranj Yegezarian. Taranj is the founding artistic director of Golden Thread Productions, the first American theater company devoted to the Middle East, where she has spent her professional life exploring Middle Eastern culture and identity through theater arts. She's an accomplished director as well as playwright, actress, teaching artist, and arts leader. A native of Iran and of Armenian heritage, Taranj holds a master's degree in theater arts from San Francisco State University. Her directing credits include A Girl's War by Joyce Van Dyke, Nine Armenians by Leslie Avazian, Tamim by Betty Shamia, Three Stops and Scenic Roots by Yusuf Al-Gundi. As a playwright, her plays Call Me Mehdi, Waves, Dawn at Midnight, and Behind Glass Windows reflect the perspective of the culturally displaced in tackling today's world of contradictory realities and values. And as a leader of Golden Thread Productions, which she has helmed since founding the organization in 1996, she has produced several decades worth of programming in the SF Bay Area, including the popular Reorient Festival, an annual festival of plays exploring the Middle East. Since 1999, more than 30 plays have been presented at the Reorient Festival, the majority of them world and or U.S. premieres. For 4 weeks, the festival provides a rare opportunity for artists and audience alike to engage deeply and directly with the Middle East in a creative and supporting setting that displaces misinformation and encourages understanding. The Reorient Festival has provided a home to some of the best-known emerging Middle Eastern voices on the American stage and screen today, including Betty Shamia, Kaveh Zahidi, as well as such established playwrights as Naomi Wallace, Eric N., Israel Horovitz, and Moti Lerner. Golden Thread Productions was awarded the American Theater Wing's National Theater Company Grant in 2013 and 2016. It is such a pleasure to sit down and chat with you today, Taranj.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So tell us where you grew up and how you got involved with the theater.
So I was born in Tehran. I left Iran when I was 14. My family settled on the East Coast. I grew up in the Boston area. We moved the first few years, so I went to a different high school every year, and I think I found refuge in theater classes. I did theater throughout in Iran in school, but also here in high school. And then when I went to college, I continued performing, which was what I loved. And I performed in Iranian plays, in Armenian plays, and also in plays in English in school and at the university.
When did you decide that theater was going to be the main focus of your work?
It took many years because I was concerned about economic independence. And I wanted to get my degree in something that would quickly result in a high-paying job.
Yes.
And I didn't think theater would be it. And I also, as much as I love theater, I also love the sciences. So I kind of imagined that I would probably go to medical school, become a doctor, and then, you know, also continue either, you know, doing theater or supporting theater on the side. By the time, my undergrad degree is actually in clinical sciences, and my specialty is clinical microbiology and virology. And by the time I got my undergrad degree, I had already worked in a hospital for 5 years. And at that time, I realized that I do not want to go to medical school and I do not want to practice medicine in the way that healthcare is, you know, delivered here. And so at that point, then the question was, what do I want to do? And theater once again became, you know, to the top. And that's when I moved to San Francisco with the idea of auditioning for an MFA program here at San Francisco State.
Great. Was there a play that changed your life or that transformed you? Do you remember any particular theater experience or maybe just an art experience where you were?
Well, in Tehran as a child, I was exposed to a lot of theater and a lot of music. my family was surrounded by professional musicians, and some of them also worked as professional musicians and or music producer. For example, my father launched a career of a few significant singers in Iran. My parents had a nightclub. My mom was a film actress. So I was surrounded by, you know, a very vibrant artistic community. And I was also exposed to a lot of international artists. I remember, for example, seeing plays in English, not understanding much, but was very much engulfed in the sort of reality of what was happening on stage. And so, you know, I think all of that, or films. I carry all of that with me. I think in the U.S., in Boston, I saw Les Miserables. And I think I was very, as a youngster, I was very moved by how social justice and the arts came together in a way that was breathtaking, you know, that was artistically perfect in my eyes and really emotionally impactful. So I think I'll never forget that performance.
And then you went to San Francisco State for your degree, and around that time is when the idea for Golden Thread as a theater company started to emerge.
I had sort of a circuitous thing, the experience with San Francisco State, because I moved here in 91 to audition for the MFA program, and then 2 weeks before my audition, the program was canceled because of budget cuts. So I had to like figure out, okay, what am I doing? What am I going to do now? So I, you know, got a full-time job in microbiology, you know? So that was my trade, basically. After a few months of working at a clinical lab, I was hired at Chiron Corporation, which is a biotech company locally in Emeryville, and ended up working at Chiron for 10 years. But, you know, while I was working at Chiron, again, I would do small theater projects. I did some independent film work. I did some TV work. I think, you know, it was around the time that my father was, you know, ill, and we knew that he wasn't going to be around much longer. I think I sort of got a sense of time, the preciousness of time, and this question of, okay, well, what am I doing with my life, you know? And I think it was at that point that I, you know, talked to my boss and said, listen, I need to do this. If I'm ever going to do it, I need to do it now. So I then went to San Francisco State, but in their MA program, and got an MA degree. And for the MA degree, I had to write a thesis or direct a production. And so I directed a production, which was an adaptation of La Sestrada, adapted to an Israeli-Palestinian setting, and we called it Operation No Penetration. So that was our first, Golden Thread's first production. It ended up being produced in 1997. We sort of originated the project in 96.
And did you see the vision of all that Golden Thread could look forward to becoming at the moment that you conceived of that production, or did the mission kind of evolve and the scale and scope evolve?
I think it was a combination. So my, you know, sort of group of friends, we were visual artists, dancers, musicians, filmmakers, theater artists. So I intentionally named the company Golden Thread Productions and not Theater Company, because for a moment there we thought maybe we would do a variety of disciplines. We would produce films, we would, you know, organize exhibits. And so that, it very quickly became clear that wasn't possible, because already producing theater was hard enough,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah,
so,
for sure.
I couldn't do all of it. Or as a group, we couldn't do. Everyone's career sort of needed to grow at its own pace. And then in the first couple of years, you know, after Operation No Penetration, I wasn't sure if we would continue, because the one review that we got was really bad in SF Weekly. And the production did really well. We had 6 performances at the next stage, you know, that
yes.
Church. I mean, audience-wise, it did really well. Audiences were very enthusiastic. We had 6 performances. They were sold out. We really enjoyed working on the production. I think the technical you know, the production quality was pretty low. Could have been a lot better, but it wasn't. And a lot of things were sort of like haphazardly patched together. And, you know, it was what it was, but it was a very spirited production and fun. And I think, you know, to be able to laugh at the Palestinian-Israeli conflict, you know, I think it actually was an empowering experience.
Yeah.
So, but afterwards, I mean, after reading that review, I was like, you know, what am I doing? You know, I should just forget about it. And then everybody around me was like, no, you should continue, you should continue. Nobody's doing this work, you should continue. So then the next year we had another production. And then the year after, you know, it was 1999, and we started the Reorient Festival. We started our Women's Day event. So it was a slow progression, but there were a few fundamentals that we knew from the beginning. We knew that we would be broadly, like, it would be focused on the Middle East, but broadly defined, mm-hmm. and that we would be inclusive. I mean, I come from, you know, sort of a mixed heritage family. I'm Armenian and Iranian. I grew up Muslim and Christian, so that sense of mixed bloodness was very important to me, and being an outsider insider was very important. And, you know, social justice was at the core of what we were doing. Self-criticism, inquiry, like, there were essentials that from the very beginning defined our work, and that hasn't changed. I think what has changed, I think, is the business side of theater, you know, has really changed. Like, we've become a business, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, in the beginning, like, you know, I don't know how to, like, do accounting and whatever. Like, so for an artistic director to be expected to immediately be a successful business person, I think that's a little unrealistic, and they don't, I don't know, maybe some schools teach you that stuff, but sure. In my theater program, there was no, the business of theater. So it took a long time for me to learn that stuff. Thank God for, you know, like, Theater Bay Area and, like, other theater companies and managing directors who support each other. But I think that was the hard part.
The San Francisco Bay Area is so lucky to have Golden Thread here, and I think most people in the Bay Area know kind of what Golden Thread does, but maybe nationally you could help our listeners understand what's the full scope of the mission and the programming of Golden Thread.
So our mission is to develop and produce plays from or about the Middle East. And the Middle East is, you know, it has a historically, the historic Middle East is very diverse. Tribes, many different nations, many different cultures, birthplace of, you know, the three major religions. Already the historic Middle East is very diverse, but today's Middle East, contemporary Middle East, is also very diverse and very much spread around the world. So diversity is really important. So in our productions, this is one reason why Reorient Festival, which is our festival of short plays, was created, was so that we can sort of showcase the diversity of the Middle East in one evening,
yeah.
Both aesthetically and in terms of cultural perspective. We have an annual Women's Day event. So every year I curate a program that highlights the work of Middle Eastern women artists. We have a youth program, Fairy Tale Players, where we create short plays, half-hour plays, inspired by or based on children's stories or fables from the Middle East, and then we tour it to libraries and schools. So we've, over the years, we've tried to really build a very comprehensive, you know, program that is very much focused on new play and new play development, because even our children's program is new plays that I'm writing. So it's focused on new play and new play development. It's very much focused on playwrights and playwrights' voices, staying true to what the playwrights are experiencing and wanting to say, because I think, again, you know, having lived through 9/11 and the invasion of Iraq and all the recent wars, it's very easy if you're from the Middle East to sort of isolate yourself and not really express what you're truly feeling or struggling with. So that's been at the core of our work. And in our 22 years of being around, I've known a number of artists who either changed their name because they couldn't get work as a Middle Eastern, or many more artists who have come and worked at Golden Thread and have said that the experience of working at Golden Thread is unique and often life-changing, because for the first time they feel like they're surrounded by people who actually understand what they're saying. You know, because we, you know, we're not just representing a perspective that's outside, it's our own perspective, our own experience. So we're all in it together, and I think that creates a very supportive environment.
Yeah. All over the national theater landscape, there's been a lot of conversations in the last few years about decentering the narrative from whatever is the quote-unquote mainstream narrative. And you had an amazing panel discussion while you were doing Reorient this year that I really enjoyed, where you brought in a perspective. We were talking about your training in Iran while you were in school, and you were saying that it almost didn't seem like there was a center of perspective to compare to because your influences and the demands and the rigor of your program was such that you would be required to be just as familiar with Japanese cinema as South American cinema. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about your sense of decentering the narrative and what approach you take.
I mean, so just going back to, you know, the difference between education in many other countries compared to the U.S. is that, you know, in the U.S. is a very large country and already, you know, spread, you know, very spread out and very diverse, and but very much sort of focused on this Eurocentric education, Eurocentric arts, Eurocentric history narrative. And in many ways, we behave as an island, you know, because we're not really touched. Like, we have Canada to the north and Mexico to the south, but we're not really surrounded by other countries. So we don't have to negotiate those relationships. We're not impacted as much by what's happening in other countries because we're sort of safely tucked away, you know. Whereas, you know, when you grow up in Europe, which is, you know, this little tiny space with so many different countries and a history of all World War One, World War Two, Napoleon, you know, all of that, like, those people have been at each other's throats for centuries, right? They may not talk about it now, but they have been. And so they need to learn about each other's history. So they need to know about ancient history. You know, they focus on the Greeks and the Romans, but they also, you know, need to know about China and the Silk Road. And so in Iran, similarly, we learn about Europe, we learn about Asia. We, you know, we learn about, in learning about our place in the world, we have to learn about the rest of the world. Well, whereas in the U.S., and you can see it in, you know, our sports language also, you know, it's like the World Series, and it's only, these are only American teams, right?
Yeah.
And we call ourselves Americans, whereas that's the name of this continent,
right?
So I think that's the difference, is that, you know, we're very insular and very self-centered. So we don't learn about other countries, we don't learn geography, we don't learn world history, you know, forget about world arts or anything like that. Right. So I think that's a huge, huge difference.
And how do you take that on in your programming and in your education initiatives?
One play at a time. It's like with every play, one minute detail about the rest of the world, I think, is communicated. It's tough. We were just discussing the Winter Olympics and the coverage of the Winter Olympics, and it's really frustrating because, again, it's very much focused on, you know, the winners, the medals, the, you know, Europe and the U.S., and if you're lucky, maybe Japan and China once in a while are our show. So I don't know. It's, you know, it's a struggle. It's something that I've embraced. It's like, this is the struggle of my life.
Yes, yes.
To have this like constantly be at it, right? So yeah, it's one play at a time with everything that we do, every conversation, every production in rehearsal. I just don't assume that people know. I ask, and I don't know everything about people, so I ask about them, and then I tell them about, you know, my experience or what the play is about. I always put it in the context of the play so that it's not, even if when it is a history lesson, that it's in the service of understanding the play.
That sounds like a great opportunity to tell us about the way that you run a rehearsal room. It seems, because of your mission of inclusivity, that any given cast that you work with may have folks that are quite familiar with the story and the storytelling of the Middle East, and may have folks that are not as familiar with those stories. So how do you, like, what does your rehearsal room feel like?
So we start with encouraging everyone to, you know, some of what we do, I think now has sort of become more popular or become the norm, but, you know, we were doing this for the past, you know, 15, 20 years. So, but it's, you know, encouraging people to basically bring everything that they are to the table. So this idea of separating, I don't know, your cultural upbringing from this, the project that you currently are working on. I don't believe in those kinds of separations. I believe you've been selected because of who you are, and who you are is informed by everything that has happened to you for all those years, right? So I want to know about all of that stuff, as long as it's helping us better understand the play, right? So I ask about people's histories. I ask about, you know, because we work with many immigrants, you know, those personal narratives tend to be very rich. The questions that are asked tend to be sometimes politically controversial, because we have, again, people who come from different political narratives, and those narratives are sometimes in conflict with each other. From the very beginning, you have to create an environment where people can have those kinds of difficult questions and sort of tackle those conflicts in an environment that is, again, focused on the play and productive for all of us, an environment that leads to a better understanding, as opposed to, you know, grumpiness and sulking and walking away. So we've had, you know, we've done plays that deal with actual current political conflict, and those are hard. It's hard to have those conversations. It's hard to have you know, people say, hey, I was never taught this in school. And so it's not about, it's not their fault, right? But now that you are being exposed to it, now what?
Yeah.
You know, we did a play of mine, 444 Days, that's about the hostage crisis, right? And this isn't ancient history. It happened in 1979. So many people have completely forgotten about it. And so talking about what actually happened, and these are documents that have been made available, many of them by the U.S. government, many of them by biographies of the ex-hostages, as well as people in Iran who were involved in the hostage taking. So you put those stories together, and you have to navigate through it and talk about what it was and what the suspicions were. And I think for, you know, an American who has grown up with this idea of U.S. involvement in foreign lands is always focused on bringing democracy and equality. That myth, when you shatter that myth, then that's difficult.
Yeah.
And so if I want that actor to be able to do justice to that character, I'm not going to direct them to be, you know, create this two-dimensional monster for me. That's not what I'm interested in. I want to unpack the nuances of that character.
Yes.
And all the different factors that went into making this person, you know, in the case of that play, an ex-hostage who in fact was involved in espionage, right?
Yes.
So how do you create that character? Because you have to be able to unpack the conflicts that exist within this person. So you need to be able to have those conversations, otherwise you can't do justice to the play, I think.
Yes. Your work is so focused also on new plays and world premieres and U.S. premieres. I wonder what your process has to offer new play development. How do you approach a new play differently than the adaptation of Lysistrata, for example?
I think in many ways, the stories are new to these audiences. So there's a certain level where all of it is new play.
Sure.
Because it has to be gently developed over a long time. When we're talking about new play development with living playwrights, I don't know, I think for us, more than anything else, it's about empowering the playwright to be able to tell the story that they want to tell. Oftentimes, we've had this experience of working with playwrights who, in other theaters, they've been told that they have to explain the character's choices or the context in which the story is being told, or add a lot of sort of exposition so that the audience can understand what is happening. And that tends to weigh down the play, right?
So interesting.
So,
yeah.
So we've had experiences where we had to sort of free the playwright from that burden so that they could focus on the story that they're actually trying to tell.
Yes.
Right? Sometimes for playwrights that are tackling historical events or contemporary political events, there's so many different perspectives in these things. So they worry about, do I have the right to tell this story? Am I worthy of telling this story? Can I do it justice? Can I represent it fairly?
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe this is a mistake, but I believe you should not worry about any of that. And you should really focus on telling the story. Because I think as a storyteller, as a playwright, you're driven. Those characters are living within you. And those characters have a very specific thing that they want to say and do. And if you overburden yourself with all of these external expectations and fears and etc., then you can't really tell the story that you want to tell. So I think first and foremost, particularly with playwrights who come from the Middle East, there is that issue,
yeah,
that we have to deal with. Then there are, you know, touchy subjects sometimes that I think the playwright is clear about what is the story that they want to tell, but it's just a difficult story. And it's touchy and it's, you know, politically, it's a hot
topic.
Yeah, it's a charged topic. I mean, it's just about being gentle and being protective at the same time, pushing the playwright to be able to sort of sometimes even discover what is it that they're trying to tell and support the playwright through that process. It's now become sort of our usual mode of operation to develop plays over many years. I would say between 2 to 5 years sometimes, depending on, you know, where it's coming from. But when I was working on Esfahan Blues, for example, you know, I took some of the, because there was this American black musician who, this is in 1963, came to Iran and met someone, right? So this is in the middle of the civil rights movement in the U.S. And the musician was very critical of what was happening in the U.S., right? And so that language, I needed to access that language. And I needed the support of my cast, the collaborators, and all of that. So in that production, it was really important to bring in collaborators that can support the story that the playwright is trying to tell, right? So, you know, it depends. It varies from production to production, but I think the main thing is to really empower the playwright to be able to tell the story that they wanna tell.
That's such a great... everything you've just said makes me think about how the burden of what an American audience expects from a Middle Eastern story is one of the biggest challenges, I think, that theaters might be asking as they think about programming works about the Middle East. I wonder what your analysis is of, you know, kind of the biggest burdens of expectation out there and how to navigate those. You know, if you could whisper to artistic directors across the country.
I mean, I think the hardest thing is for people to realize their own prejudices. That is really difficult. It's, you know, people say, oh, Islamophobia is bad. I want to do a play that deals with Islamophobia, but they don't realize that their own perspective or the perspective of their play readers and people who select the plays are very much shaped by American media and, again, education. And so they are more likely to choose plays that perpetuate stereotypes in them than, for example, we are. Because, you know, I read a play and I say, oh my God, that is like the most stereotypical representation of a Muslim woman or a conflict between a Muslim and a non-Muslim. Right? So, like, my radars are up.
Yeah.
And I'm used to detecting those things. But, you know, I would say your average artistic director isn't. And they're sometimes surprised when, you know, we might ask them a question, well, why are you producing this as opposed to like that other play that I think is better? And, you know, they might say, oh, because, you know, my audience would respond to this story or to this particular plot or whatever. But that is actually because it reconfirms what they already believe.
Yes.
So the biggest challenge for us in my not-so-hidden agenda is to change the narrative about the Middle East.
Yes.
At least in theaters, if not every other platform in the nation,
yes.
Right? So my biggest challenge in doing that is to make people realize that they are also holding these prejudices and to expose that, right? And I think that is, that's the biggest difficulty. So this is why you see certain plays are more frequently produced, because I think something in it
is just supporting a confirmation bias.
And that doesn't mean that that play is bad.
Right.
It just means that it's in the way it's presenting the story, it helps. It doesn't challenge, I would say, audience, you know, your mainstream theater audiences.
Yeah.
Whereas Golden Thread, I mean, every damn play that we produce is constantly challenging audiences, and to a point where sometimes people speak up and say, you know, please.
I feel too challenged.
I'm overly challenged. So, yeah, I think that's the biggest issue.
That's so useful. You know, one of the things I really enjoy about your mind is your critical analysis. Mm. And we're in a moment right now in the American theater of a big moment of transition with our leadership in the American theater, but also I think in terms of criticism and theater criticism. And I know you are a terrific critic. You have a great critical voice. You've written on a lot of different platforms. What do you think American theater criticism is lacking, and where could it improve? How long do I have, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think, you know, theater criticism at its best helps us understand what the play is trying to do and how a particular production has succeeded, right, in doing those things. So, I mean, I think that's what theater criticism is about. And I'm most touched by artistic analysis that helps me see new things and discover new things, or provides like background and context and, again, helping me better understand the play. And I think, at least in San Francisco, a lot of what we see as like a review is a repetition of what happened. You know, it's basically writing about what happened on stage or who said what, as opposed to what it means. Why were those artistic choices made? If you have 12 productions of Othello on stage, what distinguishes those 12 productions from each other? It's the same play, but those 12 productions are, let's say, vastly different. But why are they different? And so I think it's helpful for us to have analysis that sort of unpacks the production. And to me, that means analyze the artistic choices that were made. That means design. It means acting. It means directing. I have rarely read a review, a theater review, that actually touches on the director's choice. Like, what's his name? The guy who won 2 Tonys or was nominated by the Dutch director.
Ivo.
That was
on. Ivo,
yes,
Van Hove.
Right.
Yeah.
That aesthetic is so different from everything else that's happening on Broadway that, you know, you look at it and you're like, okay, here's a director that is making many choices. Why is it that this choice is more successful than the other choice? Or how is it that this particular moment in this production affects me a particular way emotionally, as opposed to, you know, the other production of Death of a Salesman?
Yes.
Or, you know. So, especially with classics, it's all about the director's take on that classic. So I'm always confused when I read a review and it doesn't talk about the director's choices.
Yeah.
You know, it just drives me insane. I'm like, why are you writing? So that's, I think that's, if there was one thing I could ask theater reviewers, is to really unpack artistic design. And I would say I deeply feel the lack of that kind of analysis of Golden Thread's work, as I said at that panel, probably, is that, you know, oftentimes in the way that our work is discussed, it's like some sort of social service that we're providing.
Right.
And yes, we are providing a social service, and yes, we do have deep community roots, and we are dealing with, you know, life and death issues and political issues. At the same time, we are an artistic organization, and we are artists making choices in the way we tell a story. And I would love to see more analysis of how of the aesthetics that we present on stage. And I feel that the lack of that very much.
Yes. I'm afraid we only have time for about one more question. And I wonder if you could say something. We're in the midst of a big moment right here. It's the end, it's the middle of February that you and I are talking, and the Me Too movement has kind of exploded around the world. And I just wonder if you have any advice for young women or young people of Middle Eastern descent who want to go into a career as a director.
Mm-hmm.
What would you tell them? I mean, you're one of the most incredible women leaders in the San Francisco Bay Area. You've been doing it for 20-something years.
I mean, I would, to young women, the thing that I always say is move in the world with confidence. Don't apologize. Don't make excuses. Don't apologize. Do your homework and move with confidence, so that when you're going, let's say you want to pitch a project or you're going for a job interview, stick to your values and your vision. If one particular artistic director doesn't get it, move on. Find the artistic collaborators that get your work, get your vision, and keep working with them. A lot of times I find that young women are more uncertain of, you know, how to present themselves and how to talk about their ideas, or sort of want to accommodate what is being given to them. It's okay, I think especially for a director, you need to really have very strong sense of what you're trying to do and what you're trying to say. And that requires confident delivery. Yeah. You know, you can't dilly-dally around it.
Yeah.
And, you know, you got to be strong because people are going to say no to you more than they say yes, and that's hard. And yeah. It takes strength and believing in yourself.
That's great. Before we close out, I just want to see if there are any projects coming up from Golden Thread that our listeners could check out if they do it in time.
Yeah, so in March, we have a play called Oh My Sweet Land. It's by a Palestinian playwright, Amir Nazar Zouabi, and I'm directing it featuring Noura El-Samahi. It's a one-woman show. It's the story of a woman who meets a Syrian refugee and then ends up following him back to Syria. And the way the story is told, the woman is in her kitchen preparing a Syrian dish as she tells the story. So instead of building a kitchen in a theater, we're actually touring the play at different kitchens, home kitchens, community kitchens.
So incredible.
So in March, we'll have 20 performances of Oh My Sweet Land at different kitchens.
And is there food eating involved in the experience?
There is food eating involved because after the show, we do a food sharing and community conversation. So we have a recently resettled Syrian refugee cater our performances, and she provides kibbeh and yogurt and some other, you know, salads or something. And people, everybody has a bite as we sort of talk about the experience we just had with the play. We talk about, you know, certainly the Syrian refugee crisis, but also, you know, the power of theater to enable us to understand these global conflicts in a more personal and intimate way. Also, this experience of food sharing and performing while making food, you know, receiving a story while someone's preparing food, like that is very sort
yes.
of primal.
Yes.
And takes, you know, people have commented that it takes you to your like, childhood, you know, watching your mom or your grandma make food. So we sort of dig into those very universal experiences that can connect us, and then also discuss the Syrian refugee conflict. And, you know, Noura El-Samahi is an amazing actor.
She's so terrific.
And I think in this piece, she really shines.
That's great. And then in the fall, you won't be directing, but your company will be producing a world premiere.
By Mona Mansour. It's called We Swim, We Talk, We Go to War. And that's a conversation between an aunt and her nephew. They're Lebanese-American, and the aunt finds out that her nephew has enlisted in the U.S. military. And so the conversations around, you know, U.S.'s military conflicts around the world and what it means about for a Lebanese-American and, you know, what does it mean to be American? What does it mean to be Arab American? What does it mean to be human, male, female? Like, there's so much engulfed, and they have these conversations as they're swimming in the Pacific Ocean.
Right.
So the environment for the play is really interesting too.
Fabulous. Well, thank you so much for sitting down today, and I hope folks get to check out some of the productions at Golden Thread because they're really thrilling. And even if they can't, I hope they realize that the work that you're doing at Golden Thread is influencing and pushing theater around the country and helping playwrights develop these stories.
Thank you. Thanks.
This podcast was brought to you by SDC Foundation. SDC Foundation events and programs are designed to offer access, opportunity, and community to directors and choreographers at all levels of their career. To find out more, you can go to our website at www.sdcfoundation.org.